This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 16 for August 9th, 2008. Welcome to the iPhone Alley Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and this is the show that discusses all things iPhone. And joining me tonight from iProng Magazine at iProng.com is Bill Palmer. Hey, Bill.
Hey, I heard Brett Favre was traded to iPhone Alley. Which one of us is getting cut?
You thought of that one all week, didn't you?
Actually, no, that one just popped into my head. It was better than the crap I'd been working on all week, although not good, but better. So I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me, as always.
Yeah, definitely. And Jeff Gamet joins us from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing good. It's great to be here. And Bill, your joke entertained me. And ultimately, as long as I'm happy, that's all that really matters.
There you have it. And finally, we have a special guest, Sunil Vemori, who co-founded a company called Q-Tech. He develops an application right now called Recall. Hey, Sunil.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great.
So why don't you just give us a rundown of what you do, what your past experience with Apple and the iPhone is, and then what Recall does.
Sure. I actually used to work at Apple some years back. I used to be part of no longer exists, part of the Apple Advanced Technology Group. That's where they did all the future research for Apple. And since then, I have, after leaving Apple, went to school, came back, and started the company based on some of the ideas I did when I was at school. The company, as you said, is called Q-Tech. The product is called Recall. And what we do is we work on technology to help people remember better.
Great. And do you want to tell us how Recall works and what's different from all the different, to-do apps?
Sure. The two main things that Recall does is, first, it allows you to get things out of your head very, very quickly. Anything that you want to remember, and save it someplace safe. So, for example, if you can either use by voice or by text. So we have an iPhone application where you launch Recall on your iPhone. Anytime you want to remember something, you just say it to Recall. It will convert what you say to text, analyze it, try to organize it for you, and then figure out what would be a good time to remind you about all this. So in contrast to some of the other to-do applications you see out there, some of them are text only, where you have to type directly onto your iPhone, or I see some of the voice note applications out there where you have to record your voice, but you don't get the benefit of it converted to text. And for neither of those, do you have the ability for the application to try to figure out how to organize it. And what I mean by that is, if you say or type a date or time, it will put it at the on the right date or time. If you say something like, I need to buy a new pair of shoes, it'll put it on your shopping list. If you say it's a note or a meeting, etc., all of these things, it will put it into the right place so that you don't have to worry about organizing it. And the last part is the memory jogger, which, and there's two ways this thing works. Either you can have Recall set to remind you via SMS, email, or instant messenger, or if you shake your iPhone, it will give you a memory jog of what it thinks is a good thing to remind you about right now.
Cool. Now, how does it do the voice-to-text?
We do voice-to-text by anytime you do a recording on your device, we send up the recording to our system, where we use a mix of automatic and human transcription to convert what you say to text. And then once it's ready, we send it back to you.
And how long does that process take?
Usually it takes a couple minutes. Depends here and there. You know, if you have a very long recording, it's going to take a little bit longer. And you know, if we're getting lots and lots of people all recording at the same time, you know, it's just like rushing in a door all at once. It'll take a few minutes extra to get everybody through.
Gotcha. So when you were describing it, as a way to whenever you think of something you have to do, you put it in there immediately, so it's not on your mind. It's in the safe place for you to look at later. It sounds a lot like the getting things done principle. Is that sort of what it's modeled after?
Not exactly modeled after, but it has similarities to getting things done. We share the idea that you want to get things out of your brain very, very quickly. Getting things done asks you to follow a certain philosophy of how things should be organized, and it wants you to organize it in this way. And they have various categories that they want you to put things into. What we try to do is we try to take that responsibility away from you by trying to figure out what is the right category for it and then reminding you at the right time. It does require a certain amount of discipline to use getting things done, and many people have used it successfully, don't get me wrong. It's a fine thing to use. But for other people who would like to have an alternate way to help them remember things or to supplement their getting things done process, recall is a way to do this. And what I mean by supplement is we don't require that you keep the data in our system. We have ways, so for example, we can generate iCal feeds and RSS feeds. So if you want to import this thing into one of the programs you already use, that capability is there. So you don't have to break with an existing mechanism you use, and this thing can complement getting things done as well.
Cool. So is it context-based at all, kind of sort of like getting things done, or is it just however you have it set up?
Yeah, we have certain contexts based on time. So, for example, things that need to be done today, soon, overdue, later, etc., based on what it is. So, for example, if it's a task, if it's something that you need to buy on the shopping list, or if it's notes, or by people. So, for example, I can share reminders with other people. And you know, my wife shares reminders to me, and then I can see what are the things related to her that I need to remember, whether it be something that she's asked me to do, or it could be something like something she likes, and I need to be reminded about it from time to time. You know, I have reminders set in for friends who I haven't seen in a long time, and the memory jogger every once in a while will jog my memory about something that they like, the names of their family, their birthday, whatever it might be. You know, maybe they're, you know, they're big fans of, you know, eating cantaloupe. It doesn't matter. I put all these facts and information into the system, and then the memory jogger will remind me about these things at various times to keep my memory strong.
So it sounds like it's an application for people who don't necessarily like all the aspects of GTD applications, that, you know, maybe they're too structured in a certain way, and they want to be a little more flexible with it. You know, like you said, with remembering, you know, facts about different people, or, you know, that, and, you know, getting various things done, that sort of thing. It sounds like a flexible getting things done type of application.
Yeah, I mean, the people who and the users who've used this have found it to be successful in that way, that they have a little bit more flexibility. And it's also not necessarily just about getting things done. It also can have to do with just remembering things about people. This is a common use we see. Or another common use that we're seeing is people do things like remembering good habits they should have, like, remember to get up and take a half an hour walk. I mean, you know, self-affirmation things people are using this for. It's quite creative how people are using it. So it's not purely about getting things done. It's also about lifestyle as well, that if, you know, people want to, you know, be in touch with their friends better, or remember things about their friends, their colleagues better. And also remember, you know, all the way from that to remembering that, hey, on my drive home today, I need to go pick up three things at the store. So it spans a little bit beyond just the, you know, absolute, I need to get this thing done, be productive type of an application. It allows us to have, you know, better quality of life, if you will, by helping us remember the things that we want to remember better.
So it's an external brain.
Yeah, that's one way to think about it, an external brain.
An external brain.
Go ahead.
I was just going to remark upon how beautiful the application is.
Oh, thank you. Our designer would be very happy to hear that. And one of the things that our designers wanted to have is they didn't want people to feel as if when they're going to an application that's intended to help them remember, that it's so Spartan and, you know, walled up. They wanted it to be enjoyable to have. Anytime you wanted to have your memory jogged or remember things. So even if it is something like, I need to go remember to buy that toilet tissue, at least the best, you know, you can get the benefit of, you know, having it look nice or a nice looking application when you're doing that. So thank you.
Yeah, definitely. So, Jeff or Bill, did you guys have any questions for Sunil about the app?
Where has this app been all my life is my question. I have the short-term memory of a fish, so this would be great.
Well, let me ask you, what do you use to help yourself remember better now?
A series of annoying reminders on iCal that get definitely more annoying on my iPhone, because sometimes I forget to put them for certain times of day and it goes off at 4 in the morning reminding me to pay my electric bill or something crazy like that. So I've just been longing for a system. Yeah, for a system that was more organized and than just the goofiness I've been doing. So this is definitely going to check this out because I got great long-term memory. But when you said the thing about the shoes, I laughed because I literally was tweeting every day, everybody remind me tomorrow to buy some new shoes. Because I'm like, I'm not going to remember when the stores open tomorrow and it's 11 at night now. So it's exactly for someone like me whose short-term memory is just, you know, sometimes kills my productivity. So I'll be checking it out.
Great.
All right, so here's my question for you.
Yeah.
Since you have data that's going into your system and then back to either your iPhone or your computer, where does all the data live?
The data lives up on our servers and gets synced to your iPhone. And so so this has an advantage. You know, one of the advantages is you don't have to be an iPhone user to use this. We actually have toll-free numbers in U.S., Canada, and U.K., so if you don't have your iPhone or if you're not an iPhone user, you can just dial up one of our toll-free numbers to access it, and it's always available on the servers. The iPhone has the advantage that it syncs up with the server and lets you access this offline. So, you know, say you're out in a plane or something like that, and you wanted to record your notes or type in your notes, all of this, well, record it while you're detached, and once you get attached up again to the network, it'll sync up and take care of all the speech to text, all the analysis. Once you get back online, put everything in the right place. So the iPhone application is not required. All the minimum requirements for this is just a telephone. So we have telephone users who just use the telephone and SMS for their entire interaction. But when you use it on the iPhone, you get a lot more benefits of offline access, being able to record natively, worldwide access. Since we have telephone numbers in 3 countries, but what we're finding is when people are traveling, especially outside of these countries, they'll be able to use it. So yes, and we also have an instant messenger client, which allows you to access it without voice. Our users were telling us that sometimes they'd rather just type into Recall, and the fastest way is just to bring up their IM client, or they already have their IM client up, and they just type a quick note to Recall. Send it off, get it out of the way, and then they're back to doing what they were doing before. So it all lives on our servers and gets synced up to the iPhone whenever you're online.
Now, is there a desktop application for this right now?
There is a desktop application on the PC and a web application. We also have a Firefox toolbar. So if you're browsing the web, you see something you want to remember, boom, you can just throw it to you that way, or you can get your memory jogs right on your toolbar. And we have a Google Gadget as well.
Cool. Now, how about speed when you're recording the voice notes? Do you have to be on a 3G or Wi-Fi network, or can it work over Edge as well?
It can work over Edge. Okay. And so because what we do is we'll record, we make the recording directly on the device. It gets uploaded with whatever connection you have, and you wouldn't even notice the difference between the two because it all happens in the background. Once you get back online, it'll just upload it, and you can continue on. And you can just keep recording, in fact, and it'll just start queuing up these things and using whichever data connection you have.
Okay.
All 3 data connections work just fine.
Now, what about security? You said that you can call in for this kind of thing, and it exists in all these different places. How is it authenticated with you?
So we do, secure password authentication with all of these things to get access to the data. So, for example, on the iPhone, you have to give it your login password to your account before you can get started with this thing, just like you do it with your email on the mail application on the iPhone. Similarly, with the website, what you do is you tell us what your IM address is and what your telephone numbers are, so we know the right the right caller. And if you want additional security, say on your telephone, we can further ask for a PIN number just to make sure somebody isn't trying to play funny games with your telephone number.
Gotcha.
Very cool. I have a security question for you now.
Yes.
All right. So since the voice translation is part software and part human, let's say you're working with some proprietary information and you're making notes about it. What do you have in place to make sure that people's private information stays that way?
So I think what you're talking about, doing the transcription, will they have privacy with that data? So
yes.
First thing is, the people who are doing the transcription do not know the identity of the person who is doing this. They have no way to connect up that particular piece of audio recording they have to whose account it is. It's completely anonymized with that. And after they have done that, it is in your account. So unless somebody happens to recognize the person's voice, and it would be very odd if they did. I mean, it would have to be an incredible coincidence, because our team is located abroad, and if you happen to know one of them, they recognize your voice. But so that is how it is the data is anonymized. Now, if additional security is needed for this, we have a couple techniques we can put into place that would give further security for this. For example, trying to further anonymize the speech so that you couldn't even tell by the voice. You might have seen this in like television programs when somebody's testifying against the mafia. They try to disguise their voice and things like that. So there are further techniques we can do like that to further protect people's data.
Okay, cool.
All right. Unless you guys have any more questions about recall, I'll just wrap that little segment with saying that Recall is a free application, and you can get it in the App Store right now. They're at version 102 right now, and I don't know if you have any. Do you have any planned updates right now?
Yeah, we have planned updates. We've been reading all the user feedback and going as quickly as possible to fix all the fix the issues people have been reporting. And there have been a couple feature requests, and we're going to be getting those out very, very soon. So expect to see updates very, very soon from now.
Okay. And on that note, I have to ask you because, regarding the update process and the submission process to the App Store and all of that, what has your experience been dealing with Apple being your sole way to distribute your applications?
Well, our experience has been quite positive. From the beginning, our relationship with Apple, they've been very enthusiastic seeing Recall come to the App Store. Recall has been around since January 2007, not on the iPhones. But when we had our first iPhone web application, when we released that in 2007, Apple took notice of that and identified it as one of the things that that they wanted to have on the as a native application. So they've been very warm to us and very generous with both their time and attention to help us navigate the process. So I know other developers are struggling, and I'm trying to get their applications submitted, etc. But our experience has been positive.
So what is the what's the process like for submitting an application to the App Store? And do you have any insight or idea of how Apple on their end actually approves an application?
I don't know a lot of the details on how they approve it. The process we did was is the process outlined on the iPhone developer site. So there they identify a set of steps you have to do, submitting the binary, submitting all the collateral with it as well. And once you submit through this, then they'll get back to you about if there's any problems, any questions that they have, and then they'll approve it. For us, it's been pretty smooth. We haven't really run into any significant problems with it, I think they could just be getting overwhelmed with the number of requests for the number of applications. I know there were some 500 applications on day one, and we were fortunate to be part of that group, and now there's over 1,000. So sounds like they got a lot of work to do to get all that stuff done. But But yeah, our experience has been quite positive with them, and I think we've been very fortunate with that.
Now, are developers required to submit the source code as well as the binary?
No,
just the binary.
Yeah, just the binary.
Okay. So yeah, I have to mention that I've been looking forward to an application called Mobile Chat by the guys at 2008. We had those guys on a while ago to discuss Mobile Chat. And they, I think they submitted their application for review maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it's still not up in the App Store. It's kind of just, you know, sitting in limbo. And I know that Erica Sadoun as well has submitted a couple different applications to the App Store that just, you know, seem to just be sitting there, and Apple's not doing anything with them again. I think another developer, Nicholas Pike, who did the Twitter application a while back for jailbroken phones, is also having issues with his applications. I'm not sure if they're up now. They may be now, but it's been taking a long time for Apple to get through these. Now, what do you think of Apple's ability to approve these applications and the way that, you know, you have to every time you want to update, you have to send them a that update for to be approved again, and you know, you can't have any beta testers outside of your own company to determine whether or not this is a good release or not. You just kind of leave that out to the users.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. And we face that situation also, where, you know, doing updates and not having the benefit of having at least a small group of, you know, trusted people or even some of our users asking them to test it ahead of time. We hope Apple corrects that shortly, because I've been seeing rumors that that they're going to be correcting that shortly as well. We hope that'll change so that we can actually submit it to beta testers before we submit it to everybody, because you submit it, if there's any type of problem with it and then it goes out to everybody, then it's hard to pull it back, and it could be quite disastrous. Yeah. So I really hope they fix that shortly, because I think a lot of developers are facing the same issue there. And just like we are, we'd love to see a way to do just exactly as you said.
Yeah, that and also, you know, distributing. If you have a pay application, you want to be able to distribute it to publications who want to write reviews for you. Yep. You know, your application is free, but I've had a lot of developers try out the ad hoc method. Sometimes it works, a lot of times it doesn't work. Have you had any experience with the ad hoc distribution?
No, we haven't tried that yet. So, our basic process is to really test it hard before we do a submission. I mean, we try to be really super careful because we know that this problem exists, and not that we wouldn't do it otherwise, but we take extra vigilance, double, triple check everything just to make sure, because of just the risk it would take if we were to release something without that. So the ad hoc method, you know, yeah, that sounds nice and everything like that, but it's just not the same as being able to release it as a beta out there and having people test it a little bit. We're really hoping this will be corrected shortly, and you know, we haven't been bitten by any problems with that of late. I'm all with you on what these other developers are going through. We're going through it as well, and we'd love to see Apple, bring something to help us with that shortly.
Yes. So, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say, it still amazes me. What are we, almost a month into the App Store being out? And I'm just amazed. How could Apple launch the App Store without having anything in place so that you could do product demos, product reviews, and have people that are involved in beta testing? It's like that. I don't know. Does Apple have this little magic castle that they live in where software can just magically grow and go out onto the market, and you don't have to worry about anything? I don't know. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and it's not
Apple's
like...
never...
Go ahead.
Apple doesn't beta test their software. I mean, every once in a while there's an exception. Every once in a long while, but they... You know, the way Apple works is there's never been a beta version of iPhoto or iMovie, or there was a Safari beta, you know, but I think that was a completely finished version, I think, basically, that they they were just calling it beta for PR reasons because the OS 10 had been delayed. And so I think Apple's coming up with a culture war against, you know, there's the way Apple develops software and there's the way that every other developer in the world develops software. And, you know, that's kind of, it's like two worlds colliding, I think. And they have to find some kind of middle ground.
Well, it's not like Apple isn't familiar with the idea of seeding betas and all of that. I mean, definitely OS 10, they seed betas of that to developers. And right now they're, you know, they've seeded the 2.1 beta to developers. I think they've seeded their third one just in this last couple of days to see whether or not it's, you know, working well with their applications and just in general, if it's working well on the phone. Apple definitely understands that beta testing needs to occur. I think that everything was sort of rushed. They had a lot of different things to do. They had the Mobile Me. They had iPhone 2.0 software with, you know, obviously that entails two major things, which is the enterprise stuff, as well as allowing developers to create applications for it. And then they had the iPhone 3G itself, and I guess it doesn't really roll in there as much as the other stuff because it's not software. But they definitely had a lot on their plate. And I think Steve Jobs even sent out an email to acknowledging that you know, Mobile Me at least you know was rushed, and I think that they're kind of experiencing that with the iPhone 2.0 software as well. And I gotta think that that's mostly to do with the iPhone 3G and, you know, them feeling that they needed to get that out soon.
You know, I'm hoping that it's really just a situation where Apple simply didn't have time to get everything in place for the App Store, as opposed to having a bunch of people sitting around in a conference room saying, okay, so what are we going to do about having beta tests and pre-release software, things like that. And then someone else says, oh, come on, no one will ever need that. We don't need that feature.
I'm sure they know that that's needed. You know, you got to think, especially just looking at what they're doing with the iPhone 2.1 update, that seems like it's going to be really significant just by the fact that, you know, looking at how they've seeded three versions of it already to developers. So I think it's pretty substantial. And I'm sure that, Sunil, you've probably gotten it, but I'm sure you can't talk about it. Are you one of the developers who has gotten access to it?
My understanding is all developers have gotten access to this, so it's
under
so
NDA,
yes.
Though, and I won't force you to talk any more about it. You know, I'm assuming that it's substantial just by looking at how many times they've seeded you know, different versions of it. So I think that Apple has a long way to go still, and even if you look at the push notifications that are coming, I guess they're promising it by September. You know, that's one of those things that you would think, hey, that definitely should be in there. And they, you know, they realized that back at WWDC, but I think they've just got so many things that they're dealing with right now that kind of revolve around iPhone and all of that, that, you know, they're having a tough time keeping up. I mean, just looking at the fact that they have to go through every single application, and every time it updates, an application updates, they have to look at that as well. So I think that Apple has more to do than they can handle right now. So let's move on to the NetShare topic. If you don't know what NetShare is, it's an application that was posted to the App Store. It was approved by Apple. It was a $10 application, and what it did was tether the iPhone to a computer, which shares the internet access from the iPhone to the computer, and that's something that not a lot of people really expected to see come up on the App Store, because it, you know, it's such a great thing, but you know, AT&T of course wouldn't appreciate something like that, and it's something that we've been doing. Jailbroken phones have had the ability to do that. So the application was released last week, and I think it was Friday I believe, when it was released, and it was quickly pulled down from the store. A little while after that, it was put back up onto the store. You know, we're all assuming that it was fine, and Null River, the company who wrote the application, was in talks with Apple and supposedly was going to get that back onto the store. It's now down. So we're seeing that a lot more applications being pulled from the App Store. There was the application, the I Am Rich application. It was kind of a, it really didn't do anything at all. It was just an application that was a, it was really just a picture of some sort of jewel, that, and the application cost $1,000, and so Apple pulled that down as well. Box Office was another application that we heard that was pulled down. We're not sure why that was pulled down. And Phone Saver was also pulled down, but there was actually a reason for that, and that was because George Lucas or Lucasfilm wanted to get that pulled down because, you know, they're that the lightsaber is kind of their trademark, I guess, and they want to put up their own official Phone Saver application. So we're going to see that one come back, but. So we have all these concerns about whether or not Apple is going to start getting really restrictive with these applications and start pulling them down. And you know, some of the, I mean, these applications don't really violate any of the rules that Steve put up on the screen back in March when he was discussing, you know, what would not be allowed on the App Store. And there was talk about whether or not the applications were going to were phoning home or not, and we found out that they're not phoning home. They're just there's a blacklist for applications that shouldn't be able to use the location features. But is this going to be a problem going on with the App Store and applications just being pulled down? And are we going to see a lot of you know, people who buy applications like NetShare? Are they going to, you know, have spent money on that, and eventually get access taken away from them to that application? Or, you know, what do you guys think of this?
It's a PR nightmare more than anything, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, NetShare is, we've talked about, it's a pretty high-level app. You know, an average user probably would never even think of, like, they could even envision themselves doing tethering. But now the NetShare, it's there, it's taken away, it's there again, it's taken away again. Now, average users are saying, well, wait a minute, this is like the little application that could. I got to go check this thing out. I only want it because they keep dangling in front of me. And so all of a sudden, it becomes a poster boy for every application that looks pretty good and then gets taken away. And it seems like Apple hasn't made up their mind yet. They're probably torn between not wanting you guys to go hack your iPhone or unlock it, or I'm using all the wrong terms, jailbreak is what I'm looking for. You know, they don't want you to go jailbreak. They want you to do it the right way, and they know that if they don't offer NetShare, some of you are going to go jailbreak. But if they do offer NetShare, then they're going to tick off AT&T. So they're probably, you know, having internal debates or something. They can't make up their mind, and now it's all – to me, it's just a PR disaster, especially on – you know, something good-natured like NetShare. I mean, I Am Rich. They look like heroes for pulling that stupid crap off there. I give the guy credit, but, you know, I don't think you can say, well, how dare they take down I Am Rich? But NetShare or Box Office, it's like, well, wait a minute, what are you doing? And you know, I said last week, if it got that close to approval, I bet Apple's working on this. Boy, was I wrong. They just don't know what they're doing over there, approving stuff left and right and unapproving it. And it's like, I don't know, it's like being in Walmart and they keep putting stuff on the shelf, and I really don't know. But I think it's a PR problem more than anything.
You know, I think we're going to see this problem continue for a while because, well, Michael, like you said, the App Store is kind of rushed right now. And I think Apple is sorting out exactly how to deal with the volume of applications they're getting, and they're hammering out what their internal guidelines are for approval. So I think for a while we're going to see this thing where apps appear and disappear, and then they'll get it sorted out, and we won't have to deal with it hardly ever after that. But the big problem is Apple doesn't communicate hardly at all. So unless they're going to change that and open up a more productive dialogue with developers, we're going to see more of this PR mess that comes along with the growing pains of making the App Store into what it ultimately will be.
Yes. So the developers right now are still under an NDA, and a lot of them are kind of complaining about, you know, them not being able to discuss different things regarding the SDK and all of that, and collaborating and trying to solve problems. Sunil, as a developer, what has the NDA affected you?
We would obviously love to talk with other developers who are sharing some of the, you know, technical problems and, you know, other, you know, other situations that we face as well. So in that sense, it's very hard to foster community of people who want to help each other build great applications for the iPhone, which I think would benefit everyone, benefit Apple, benefit all the different companies working on. Since, you know, our restrictions on what how we can communicate with other developers has been, you know we'd like to be able to do so, but, you know, until the NDA is lifted, we are bound by it. We benefit from being able to put our application on the iPhone store, on the App Store, and this is one of the downsides for it, unfortunately. And we hope Apple will change their stance on it soon, so, you know, we can, you know, work with other developers of, you know, companies who are just, you know, right next door to us, who are working on applications, and be able to talk a little bit more freely about it. I mean, there are, you know, very few, if any, news groups, online news groups, et cetera, where people can discuss these things. And from what I understand, as soon as these things come up, you know, Apple legal comes in and shuts them down because of the NDA. It really would be nice if that wasn't there, but, you know, we obviously are honoring our commitment on our side of the NDA to not say anything, but we hope that changes real soon.
Now, has Apple given a time frame for when the NDA will be lifted?
I haven't heard anything about that.
Okay. Now, someone, I forget, I don't have the article in front of me, but someone, I think it was on Daring Fireball, mentioned that it may be because Apple wants to patent something in the SDK, and the NDA allows them to say that, well, this is something that hasn't been officially published yet, so they can still patent it. What are your thoughts on that sort of thing?
I can comment on the speculation. There is that, you know, and I have a few patents myself, and knowing what the patent process is like, just by virtue of releasing this thing, even under NDA, I don't think they, you know, Apple would be able to protect any patent rights on it, because there's this thing called prior art with patents. And by releasing it prior to patent, you know, releasing the iPhone, the SDK, all these things prior to patenting it, it would seem to be very difficult for them to get whatever patents there is. So, you know, if that's a speculation, I'm not quite sure that could be the reason. I can only speculate that it's something else, but I wouldn't know what it is. But this seems to be a bit of a stretch, in my opinion.
Okay. So do you have any speculation on why you think they're still holding on to that NDA?
I have no idea. And, you know, like I said, we wish it wasn't the case, but, you know, we haven't, you know, I haven't heard one way or the other as to the reason about that. So, yeah, I'm hesitant to make a guess, if you will.
Okay, Jeff, do you have anything to comment on with the NDA and the developers?
You know, not being in the program, so I'm not under NDA. Of course, that also means I don't have access to any of this information. But I'm thinking that this may very well just be a case of Apple wanting to hold all of their cards real close to their chest, and that when the day comes, if the day comes, when they finally say, okay, let's go ahead and lift this NDA, people are going to look at what's been protected and they're going to go, are you kidding me? This is it? This is what the NDA was all about? Please. So I have a feeling that ultimately it's not going to be as big of a deal as a lot of people are making out. I don't think that there's anything spectacular hiding behind that NDA. I think it's just all the regular coding type things that you need to have to be able to write apps for a platform.
You know, I got to wonder if it has anything to do with the iPhone 2.1 update they've been ceding to the developers. And I know, Sunil, you can't comment on that. But I think there's probably, there are going to be a few things in there that are going to obviously improve the experience. Obviously, we're all hoping for at least stability in the iPhone OS, but I think we're going to see some more features in there. Just, you know, not very major features, but maybe things like stuff added to maps, like people have seen references to speed with GPS and all of that, and of course the push notifications. And I think that maybe the NDA is just sort of still looming there, just because they're still working on the 2.1 software, and I wonder if once the 2.1 software update is released, if maybe that'll be the time that they decide to lift the NDA.
You know, I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
Okay.
And here's my reasoning. If Apple needed to have the NDA in place to protect information relating to an upcoming software update for their operating system, why don't they have an NDA in place for people that are developing applications for Mac OS X?
Well, Sunil, don't they have, and I know that you're not an OS X developer right now, right?
I think I registered a long time ago, but we're not, OS, I think like many, many years ago, I've been a registered Apple developer for, for I don't even how long.
Okay.
So,
I'm pretty sure that, developers who have, advanced access to, OS X updates are under, a less strict NDA. So they're not allowed to talk about, things coming in the beta seeds that they're getting, and they're not allowed to obviously distribute those.
Right.
So, maybe they could have gone with, taking away parts of the NDA, saying only you can't talk about obviously any updates that we're seeding to you, but you can talk about, everything else in the current incarnation of the SDK. Do you think that would be a more logical step for them to take if that were the case?
Apple's lawyers are at their discretion to write those NDAs any way they want. And so it's, for the iPhone, they have written it in a particular way for whatever reason. We don't know. And for Mac OS, they've written it in that particular way for whatever reason. Again, I wouldn't know. So if those NDAs are different and give more or less restrictions, gosh, I wouldn't really know why they would do it one way or the other. Obviously, we'd love to see more open communication with all of this. So that we can work as a community towards our mutual problems, but not quite sure why what Apple's rationale would be here.
The iPhone has ever since its announcement has always been just this really, really mysterious product. Still, we have these weird restrictions such as not being able to use it as an external storage device, and there are a lot of things that we're not allowed to know about as far as with applications, in the SDK and all of that. And for a long time, we were in the dark as to if they were going to allow third-party applications on there. And I wonder with all this secrecy, if it's not Apple kind of still not sure of how to proceed in these different areas with the iPhone as far as, like external storage and, developing applications for it and all of that. Or if Apple has a really, really good idea of where they're going with the iPhone, because it seems like they're kind of following where the masses are sort of directing them to with, what they want from the iPhone.
It could just be some leftover paranoia. Let's remember that Steve Jobs was there back when the Mac launched and had a massive lead on all the competition and somehow managed to piss it all away. He was gone before they started doing most of the pissing. But still, there could be that paranoia. Yeah, they won with the iPod. They won that industry. They won the iTunes industry. But the iPhone is a lot more like a computer and a lot less like a little music player. So maybe there's just the paranoia, and maybe they're not sure. The other thing, and I'll just this is just me speaking. I don't want to get y'all in trouble, but Apple's intellectual property attorneys have, I would say, a rather unique and a lot of people would say humorous interpretation of what intellectual property law actually is and how it works. I've seen other attorneys read what's come from Apple and laugh out loud and refer to it as gibberish, and I probably shouldn't say that, but it's true. They just have a very interesting and weird. And almost like just chaotic, weird things. So when I hear that they're doing an NDA and nobody knows why, I think, well, it's just one of those mentally ill individuals down in their legal team. I hate to pick on them like that. Obviously, I've dealt with them in the past, but, you know, there are ways you deal with things, and they don't know what they're doing on a lot of things. I got some letters up on my wall here that anytime, you know, I meet somebody who's an attorney, hey, read this. That came from Apple? Are you kidding me? You know, like a company that has 3 employees could hire, you know. So I don't know. It could just be weird crap. This is a company whose accounting department is the one company in the world that thinks the Sarbanes-Oxley accounting law applies to iPod Touch software updates. The bizarre crap that comes from the, I don't know what you call them. I wouldn't say the geeks, the pencil pushers, you know, the stiff-necked guys at Apple, the accountants, the attorneys. These guys have such bizarre interpretations. Nobody seems to be controlling them. None of them seem to know how to do their jobs. And I don't want to sound bitter over it, but I don't mind that their attorneys are just kind of mean and brutal and throwing elbows. I mind that they're morons. And so I see stuff like the NDA, and I'm like, well, there they go just being stupid again. I wish Steve would do something with these guys and slap them around and say it's okay to be evil, but at least be competent. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just ranting as usual.
So do you think it's just Apple being, you know, paranoid Apple, just good old paranoid Apple, or do you think it's do you think it has anything to do with them not being exactly sure where they're taking the iPhone, or do you think they have a clear-cut path of what they're doing with the iPhone?
Oh, I wish I knew. I mean, it's one of these things where you look at it, and because it's, you know, because it's such a secret thing, we really don't know. You know, is the emperor not wearing any clothes, or is the emperor in the process of having these great put together that we just haven't seen yet? I mean, I really hope they've got a roadmap. I think it comes down to this, and I don't want to change the subject. I think it comes down to just how firmly in control is Steve Jobs of Apple. How hands-on is he with it? If he's hands-on, there's a plan. If he's being laissez-faire and it's being run by committee and he's dealing with other things he's got to deal with, or just inching toward retirement, or because he's tired or whatever, then I think we may be in trouble, because the thing with Steve's is, right or wrong, he has a long-term vision for everything he does.
Well, we definitely,
is he running the company or not?
We definitely know that the iPhone is, you know, one of Steve Jobs' you know, babies that he really cares for. That, you know, he's definitely hands-on with it. I can't imagine that he, you know, doesn't spend most of his time every day working with the iPhone team and all of that. So I guess if you put it that way, I guess that, you know, they definitely do have a clear-cut path of where they're going with the iPhone, and it may just come down to, you know, time constraints and the fact that they don't have enough people working on all of these different projects that you know, need to come together to make the iPhone a seamless product, and all of the products that, you know, sort of go along with it, like MobileMe and all of that. Jeff, do you have any insight or input you want to give on this?
What a silly question. Of course I do. All right. I don't think Apple does anything without having a clear-cut plan and a very focused plan. They know exactly where they're taking all of their products. The days where they would do things like the Apple II GS, where they'd make a product and go, let's see what happens. Those days are gone. They know exactly where they're taking this product. They just don't care to tell us right now. And so that leaves us speculating as to why they're doing certain things. Down the road, when we have the big reveal, then we'll go, oh, okay, it makes sense why this and this happened. But until then, we won't know. And even products that we look at today, like Apple TV, where we're going, okay, Apple is saying this is a hobby. Where is this going? It just feels like a floundering product. And I think that's exactly what Apple wants people to think. I think that that whole image is a very calculated move on Apple's part. Well, they position that product in such a way that when they flip the magic switch and it becomes the, oh my God, I have to have it thing, it's going to catch the rest of the industry off guard. And until then, they'll just keep telling everyone else, oh, it's just a hobby. Don't worry about that little thing over there. And we will see more things like this in the future, where Apple has us thinking, well, geez, they don't seem to have a clear plan. And then all of a sudden, we'll have something dropped in our lap and we'll go, ah, okay, it all makes sense now.
Yeah, I think right now the reason we're, you know, at least I'm so concerned about it is, and a lot of other people I'm sure are concerned about, you know, what they're doing with the iPhone, and it seems like they're kind of confused about, you know, some of these things is that, you know, they have all this secrecy, and in the past with a lot of things, they have a lot of secrecy with their products. But when we do see the big reveal of whatever it is, it seems to work seamlessly. Now with the iPhone 1.0, when it did come out, it did work seamlessly, and they put a lot of other things off. And I think that right now, with all these new things that they're experimenting with on the iPhone, is, you know, applications and, you know, enterprise stuff and mobile me and everything else that they're doing, I think that because they have so much secrecy surrounding this product, you know, when the hiccups come, it makes us uneasy. You know, we don't know what's going on, and when things don't seem to work the way that we expect them to, we get concerned, you know, that Apple doesn't know what they're doing either.
You know, it's like I said earlier, it comes back to communication, and that's something that Apple is not willing to give us as consumers, us as journalists, or the developers.
Yes. So a really interesting patent application filed by Apple has just surfaced, where they described a method for distributing your, for remote access to your iTunes from an iPhone or an iPod Touch. And the way that this would work is it would sync metadata from your iTunes library and not just the music. So it would say, okay, this iTunes library has all of these songs. Here's this little file that says what all those songs are, and, you know, with all the playlists and all of that. And instead of syncing all the music there, it just knows that it needs to talk to the computer remotely whenever it wants to access that that information. And we were talking about this a couple episodes ago when we were discussing the remote application, and how cool it would be if, you know, obviously we can control our Apple TVs and the iTunes libraries, but it would be so awesome if we could just have an infinite amount of music with us, as far as you know it's only constrained by how much music you can put on your computer. Does this sound like something that Apple could actually produce, or do you think that the record labels would get in the way and try and stop them like they did with iTunes?
You know, it's, well, having the patent is smart, because if Apple has it, they can use that as a tool to block other people from doing the same thing. So patenting it totally makes sense. As far as how would they implement this, would they implement this? Well, as I recall, and I'm kind of pulling this off the top of my head, there was a court case that just recently concluded, like in the last couple weeks, that said it is okay for consumers to remotely store their TV shows and movies. And so with that ruling, that opens up a door for Apple to say, look, the court's already said this is okay. We can let people stream their music and their TV shows and their movies from their Mac or their Windows machine from anywhere in the world to their iPod or iPhone, and it's all still locked and secured, so don't worry, your licensing is intact. And hey, the court said so pack sand.
Right. And what I was referring to when I was, you know, introducing this topic is, you know, back when iTunes was in its early stages, when it got the addition of sharing your music library across networks, you could also share your music library across the web without any problem. Of course, that ability has been taken out of iTunes since then. And I believe that was because of the record labels not appreciating that kind of power in iTunes, because they feared that, you know, their music would be pirated or what have you. With that ruling, I didn't actually hear about that until just now. That sounds like Apple could definitely get away with not only, you know, saying here's remote access to your iPhone and your iPod Touch to your iTunes library, but also being able to, you know, if you have a computer that you own. Well, if you have two computers, one at home and, you know, like a laptop or something, you should be able to, you know, take that with you and be able to share your music library from wherever you are. And they could do that really easily, you know, just by right now they have the authentication through iTunes, and you can only authorize, you know, five computers to that account. They could do the same thing, you know, they could do that coupled with, you know, something like Back to My Mac, which we all know works just so great, you know, do something like that with and, you know, share the music across that way, which would be very cool. Even cooler, obviously, is having it in the iPhone and the iPod Touch, because, you know, those are portable media devices, and it would be great, especially with the iPhone now having 3G, the ability to just, you know, grab whatever music you want, not having to worry about whether or not you have it with you. Another thing I see for that is, you know, the ability to get podcasts when you want them. Because right now there's no way to just sort of say, hey, I want more podcasts on my phone. You have to go back and you have to sync them up. And that's because, you know, applications don't have the ability to access the iPod application on your phone right now. And so that kind of keeps developers from being able to say, hey, here's another podcast. You know, well, here's a podcast catcher. Just, you know, kind of put it into the iPod application. I suppose you could get a pod catcher that... has nothing to do with the iPod application, but of course then you'd be stuck with having to stay in that application to listen to whatever you want to. So I think it'd be a really good move for Apple to embrace the ability to, you know, they have all this great wireless technology, they have Mobile Me happening, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff that Mobile Me could open up, even though it, you know, it's not much different from .Mac, but they have the ability to use the internet and your computer and, you know, sync all that up and create a great experience for, you know, something like sharing your music across the internet to wherever you are.
You know, on the podcast thing, there's no reason why Apple couldn't do that with iTunes on the iPhone or iPod Touch today. And they've already given us a great proof of concept of that in action, and it's called the App Store. If you have an application update that's available to you, the App Store on your iPhone or iPod Touch will let you download that update. iTunes looks at iPhone and iPod Touch applications exactly the same way that it looks at all of the music and video content that you can store right now. So there's no reason why they couldn't do the same thing with podcasts, and then the podcasts that you're following on your iPhone, when there's a new podcast out, okay, you can choose to download it or not.
Yeah, and they already have, and they also have the you know, the iTunes Wi-Fi Music Store, which I'm not really sure why you can't access the Wi-Fi store, you know, using an iPhone 3G now. You would kind of think that that ability would be there, but whatever. You know, that has the ability to directly interface with the iPod application on your phone, and even further, it integrates with iTunes once you sync your phone back up. So, you know, I think Apple would benefit greatly from doing, you know, maybe a pod catcher type application for the phone, or even just integrating that ability into the iPod application right now, because I'm not sure if I want to have another application from Apple, you know, that's on my home screen, unless it's something that's, I guess, that you would download from the App Store if you want it, sort of like the remote application. But I know that there are definitely a lot of people who would really, really, really appreciate a podcatcher app on the iPhone, especially one that would integrate seamlessly with the iPod application on the phone. So, you know, there's that. I would really love a remote application for my phone, remote access to my iTunes, because my iTunes library is, I don't know, 40 gigs or something like that at this point. You know, my phone's only 16 gigs. So I want to be able to listen to whatever I want to whenever I feel like it. So let's talk about the 2.01 update that was released a little bit ago, I think earlier this week on Monday, I believe. It doesn't really address many of the problems.
Anything?
Huh?
Oh, I just said anything? I don't think it addresses anything.
Yeah, I don't think it really fixed anything as far as I can see. I think there might have been like one addition to the App Store where it sort of suggests something to you. If you search for something and it can't find anything, it'll suggest an application to you. But that's the only change that I've seen in there. So far, you know, I still, there early reports from people saying, hey, my keyboard typing is faster, and it really isn't. It hasn't changed at all for me, and I'm sure it hasn't changed for anybody else.
Stopped getting worse.
It stopped getting worse?
My iPhone is, you know, I was bragging when I first installed 2.0 on my old iPhone for the first couple of days. I had no problems at all. Every single day I've used it has gotten worse and worse, to the point that I was going to wipe it and reinstall, or maybe even look at going back to 1.1.4, which I think I'm definitely now going to do. 2.01 seems to have, and this could just be coincidence, but it seems to have actually stopped getting worse each day. It's just the same level of crappiness. I scream and swear at that device so much that I'm walking down the street and I think I'm going to get arrested. I hate my iPhone now, and because I think I'm going to throw it out in the street just so I can watch it get run over. And I'm not exaggerating. I have no patience for this. If Microsoft released this, I would say it was below Microsoft levels in terms of quality, and I really think I am going to go back to 1.14, because the release of this update means that 2.1 is at least, I don't know, several weeks away, right? If 2.1 was coming out tomorrow, they wouldn't have released 2.01. So I really, this was a big disappointment for me, not just because it still sucks, but it's like, you know, it's gotten to the point where my iPhone is such a piece of garbage that I don't care about the apps. The iPhone runs like crap. I try to use the third-party apps anyway. If I have to give them up temporarily to go back to having an iPhone that I don't want to throw into traffic, literally have to hold my arm back because I'm ready to chuck it, then I think I'm ready to go back to 1.14. And thank God I didn't buy a 3G when I did, because then I couldn't go back to 1.14. So yeah. I don't know. Color me disappointed. But dang, man, iPhone just went so downhill for me. I hate even like looking at it now.
No, I completely agree with you.
I mean, at least temporarily for now.
No, the fact that, you know, just even the simplest things such as, you know, typing and not having the little pop-ups coming up, or even, you know, more annoying than that, because, you know, that for the most part can go ignored, and it kind of works out on its own. But things like going into your phone book and scrolling through and tapping on a name, I've sat there waiting, you know, for 10, 15 seconds for a name to show up the number so I can call the person. You know, I've had problems with, I hear a lot of people saying, that, going into the settings application takes a long time sometimes for them, you know, up to like, you know, 30 seconds for the, preferences application to load. And, you know, not to mention all the crashes, I've had. I think I've had like 8 now. I don't know. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll know how many crashes I've had.
I think you're up to 8.
I think I am up to 8.
I got a crash I got to tell you about. It was actually so cool. And this, I think this was after 2.0, and I was listening to Lisa Loeb, you know, and you say only hear what I want to, right? And it got on her voice, and it crashed. The 2 seconds of her voice was, you say, over and over and over again. And I had to hard reboot the damn thing to get it to stop doing it. But I thought, wow, talk about capturing the zeitgeist. It just blew my mind. It was almost worth having a crappy update just for that moment. I just had to share.
I haven't actually had a problem with it, you know, looping a sound before, but you know, that's kind of something you'd expect from like a Windows computer. If it freezes up and you're listening to music, it'll keep repeating the last sound until you reboot it. I've actually had well, not me personally, but a friend with an iPhone 3G was listening to it in the car through an FM transmitter, and all of a sudden it started skipping like a CD in the car. It was just skipping. And so it's terrible right now. And I'm not sure what the 2.01 update addresses. I'm assuming that it's, well, it said bug fixes, but also it gave a link for, looking at, security, information on the security update. So I'm assuming that it was just a security update, for what I have no idea. I assume WebKit in the phone, I guess.
Sorry, man. That was funny. It's an update for what? I have no idea. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess at the very least, it didn't make us restore our phones. Did the update go well for you guys? did it take a long time? Because I know that, I think Callie Lewis mentioned that it took her, you know, like 10 minutes to update her phone. It went pretty quickly for me. Jeff, did you have any problems?
My update went very quickly, and I was excited to have the update because I thought, oh, thank God, this will fix the keyboard. This will make maps and iCal and mail and address book and, well, pretty much every application that Apple includes with the iPhone, it will make them not crash for me. Hooray.
You know? Yeah. Well, it
all totally sucks. And my phone even locked up the other day when I tried to hang up from a phone call. I actually had to reboot my phone to get it to fracking hang up. What the hell is up with that?
Were you on the phone with Lisa Loeb?
Yeah, she kept saying,
she kept looping something.
Yeah, she was actually singing just those two words. Let me ask you this, and I'm only talking about the short period of time between now and when 2.1 comes out. I don't want anyone to think I'm giving up on the iPhone, but for that period of time until they fix this, is the iPhone even recommendable? I mean, if somebody came up to you and said, I'm going to buy an I've been on a BlackBerry, I've been on a Razr, I want to buy my first iPhone, I'm tempted to say, why don't you wait a month? Because I think if somebody buys it right now and it's their first time with it, they're going to take it back to the store and say, give me something else.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that is a really good question, yes. Because I've been thinking, okay, you know, I do need to write my iPhone 3G review, and I've been waiting until, you know, my area at Rockford got 3G coverage, and we just got 3G coverage earlier this week, and I'm thinking, great, I'm going to be able to test out the 3G network, and then I'll be able to, you know, crank out my review, and it'll be good. But, you know, with all these problems, I don't know if I want to, you know, wait for the 2.1 update, assuming that all these issues are going to be resolved, or if I should write the review with all of the problems that I observe in it, or, you know, I don't know how to really approach that sort of thing. And I don't know if these updates are really going to significantly improve things like battery life or, you know, that sort of thing. So it's just really, it's really crappy. And I'm assuming that, you know, because the 2.1 update is taking so long and there have been so many seeds to developers, that it's going to be significant. And, you know, I was thinking about it the other day, you know, with Leopard, when it first came out, it was terribly buggy. I mean, I just really couldn't even stand it. And I was very happy that I had backed up my entire drive over to an external so I could boot up from that and actually get some work done, because things weren't working for me. And the day after that, Leopard was released, I think, or a couple days after that, there was a 10.5.1 update available, and we thought, oh, great, it's the update that's going to fix everything. And, you know, it fixed like one thing. I think it was like, you know, it was kind of like this update, the 2.01 update, that it really didn't fix anything noticeable. And it wasn't until, you know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks later, when we got the 10.5.2 update, that was, you know, massive, when we actually had the had most of the problems resolved. So I'm thinking that's what 2.1 is going to be. And just, you know, going by version number, I'm assuming that's going to be, you know, fairly significant.
If I can throw a question in here.
Sure.
Let's assume these problems go away. What would you guys want to see on on the iPhone, like 2.5 version? And let's assume, like, some months down the line, Apple fixes all the problems you mentioned. What would you like to see on your iPhone? What would you like it to do?
Well, for me, I guess I want to see just really the push notifications and better integration of the applications. I want to see more flexibility with the SDK. I want to see applications like Quick come to the iPhone officially, so we can stream stream video from the phone. Because right now, as far as I know, Apple doesn't allow direct access to the camera. So I would want to see more flexibility in the SDK.
Apple allows direct access to the camera.
Do they?
There are applications out there that do that. Yeah.
Is it they're directly interfacing with the camera, or can they only say, hey, I want a picture from the camera, and then, you know, the panel returns a picture to the application? Because I was talking to I think it was Nick Dalton was the last developer that we had on, and he said that the SDK doesn't allow that. And as far as I know from talking with the Quick guys, that's the thing that's keeping them from releasing Quick on the iPhone.
So the applications I've seen, you know, allow you to take a photograph directly from the iPhone.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can essentially take a photo, or you can get into the photo roll. You know, the pictures you've already taken, you can get access to it from the application.
Yeah, but those are the only two things that applications have access to. They can only look at the photo roll, and they can only look, well, I guess, the photo library, and they can only ask for the picture taker panel, that it takes a picture and then it returns it to the application. And that's, I believe, the only access they have to it. For Quick to work, a streaming video application to work, they would need actual access to the camera, you know, as the video is coming in.
I see what you're saying.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it.
So, Jeff, what do you want to see in the iPhone down the line?
Enhanced Bluetooth support. And I don't even care if the whole Bluetooth stereo headset thing ever happens. What I want to see is the ability to like we used to have with with Tiger, where we could get the pop-up on our Mac display on our computer that shows us who's calling.
Yeah.
And we can choose to answer the phone or hang up or put them in voicemail, being able to dial your phone from your computer, all that stuff we used to be able to do with our Sony Ericsson T610s and all of those back in the good old days.
Yeah, like the application Blue Phone Elite. I know that you're familiar with that application, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's something access for applications like that to get access to that sort of thing. Or, you know, just that stuff natively in OS X, I'm sure they would allow. That would be awesome. I kind of assumed that you would be able to just, you know, look at what your text messages are, you know, if your iPhone was plugged into iTunes or, you know, make a call or something like that without any problem. Just you'd assume that with the level of integration that they can accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah, and oh, and then the other thing I'd like to see is the ability to actually synchronize notes. I give me a note application.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Think with it. Yeah.
So, Bill.
Well, you know, I've had a long running laundry list since the day the iPhone launched. I'll give one example, which is the fact that there's no way to turn off the accelerometer that triggers the automatic cover flow mode in the iPod application if you turn it more than a few degrees to the side, which makes it impossible to use it in, say, an armband because your arm's moving around while you're walking or jogging or something, and your iPhone keeps going crazy, and you have no ability to change music while you're going. I could list a thousand things like that if we wanted the show to be all day long. I will say, though, that this interface is so – the update is so crappy and so bad – that's lowered my expectations, in all seriousness, to the point that I don't much care about that anymore. All I care about is getting it back to where it was before in terms of stability. And obviously Apple didn't put out a bad update on purpose just to lower expectations. But isn't it interesting that I'm no longer ranting and raving so much about not having all these interface enhancements? And I'll be happy when we get back to stability. So
yeah,
it's interesting
I'm with you
how
on
the
that.
You know, the expectations are lower. I will say, though, that this update is so crappy that half the time CoverFlow doesn't trigger anyway. So in a way, it's kind of like a fix. I did it because when I first installed 2.0, I'm like, dang, they still didn't fix that. You know, it still triggers no matter what. There's nothing to turn it off. And then later on, it was like, oh, they fixed it. They got rid of it or something. Maybe I'm – and then I just realized it was bugging out. Later on, it was back again. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. I'm like Mr. Anti-iPhone today, I guess.
You're always Mr. Anti-iPhone, Bill.
Am I?
I don't know. We're just going to say that you are.
Well, that's a good title, you know.
Mr. Anti-iPhone?
Whatever I can do to help.
We could call you Dvorak.
I'm not going to go that far.
Words.
No, actually, I think Dave Hamilton is Dvorak now that I think of it. He's the one who twirls his mustache and says, "Nya, iPhone, nya."
just for that, when we get to the expo, I'm going to make him twirl his mustache in front of
him. He better have a mustache.
One. I'm going to write to him. Don't shave, man.
You know,
I need you to twirl your mustache on command.
You know, he has an iPhone, and I just don't believe that he's using it. I want him to send me a picture of him using the iPhone.
Well, we're going to make everybody pull out your iPhone, whip it out at, you know, at the panel, show us what you got. And if he pulls, you know, he's like, I dropped it in a puddle this morning.
I dropped it, but I have my palm.
Yeah. If he pulls out, I'm just going to beat him up. I don't care if security hauls me out of my own booth or not, but, you know.
Hey, I'm with you on that one. So Neil, what do you want to see in 2.5 or, you know, beyond?
For us, couple things I'd love to see is we'd love to have better calendar integration. I mean, this is something our users have been asking us about is, you know, the ability to, you know, especially since we're working on a memory application, the ability to integrate better with the onboard calendar. That's certainly one of the things I'd love to see. You know, the background processing is something that we'd love to see also. Again, our users are asking for the ability to have, you know, the reminders come to us even when we're not launched. Things like that, and there's a variety of the other things that we have that would really benefit from being able to do a little bit more background processing than what we can do right now. Those are a couple of things from the company's point of view. And second, I'd love to have, you know, to be able to put some external peripherals on this thing so that I can use the iPhone because you know, one thing I use my iPhone for is I use it while cycling. I do phone calls with the iPhone while I'm cycling. It works great. It's actually among all the different phones I've tried to use with this thing, because I can use the iPod headset, it works the best with that. But I'd love to not have all these dangling cables that get caught in my caught while I'm pedaling.
Yeah.
So if we had some better external peripherals for this thing to do stuff like that, I'd love to be able to take advantage of that. But yeah, those are a couple things off the top of my head.
So I guess, you know, Sunil, I didn't tell you about this beforehand. We do a iPhone picks of the week. So we just kind of we pick an application or an accessory that we like that we, you know, just want to say that this is our pick for the week. We're going to get to those in just a minute. But first, we have to mention our sponsor. And our sponsor is Freeverse, and they have an application called MotoRacer. And we've talked about this before. MotoRacer is an accelerometer-based motorcycle racing game for your iPhone. It's very cool. It's like old-school arcade games, and the point of MotoRacer is that you choose your racer, and you go to a map, and you race against other people on motorcycles, and you go through the track, and you kind of, you know, if you run up next to someone else that you're competing against, you can punch them in the face and try and knock them off their motorcycle. And it's a very fun game. And that is in the App Store right now. And for those who like Sudoku, they also have Big Bang Sudoku in there. And they also Freeverse, because they're a longtime Mac developer, they have an application that Adam Christensen mentioned last week called Jared. It's a free application. And hopefully some of you have checked it out and understand the joke, but I'm not going to ruin it for those who haven't. And Bill, did I tell you that, we made, Jared your application pick last week because you cut out before you could make one?
I heard a rumor about that. That's great. You know, I've loved Jared Butcher of Song I used to have that on my Mac years ago. So you tried to make a punchline there, and you picked something I actually like, so it's pretty cool.
Yes.
You can make my pick for me this week.
What's that?
What's that?
Isn't Jared the cover interview for the next issue of iProng?
Yeah, you know, the next time somebody cancels, I'm just going to put a big yellow face on there and say, Jared, the iProng interview. And boy, Freeverse better send me some money after that one. Huh?
Let's hope he talks to you.
Oh, he will.
Just 8 pages of blank text, like ask a question, and they're just, you know, Jared, nothing, right? Blank answer, and then another big long question, and you're giving me ideas now, and that's not good.
Yes, and Freeverse plans to release over a dozen iPhone applications and games this year, so check them out on the App Store and at freeverse.com. MotoRacer is $10, and Big Bang Sudoku is $5, and they're both on the App Store. So support us by supporting Freeverse. And with that, let's move
on. Wait, how much does Jared cost?
Jared is free.
See? I'm telling you.
So there you go. That's all also on the App Store. And they have one other game. I don't remember what that is, and I think that's free as well. But on to our iPhone picks. Bill, do you want to start off?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to go hardware this week. It's kind of ironic after I just said why I'm not going to buy a 3G iPhone right now after all. But the reason I originally didn't buy one on launch day was because every once in a while I have a 16-hour day where I totally blow through my iPhone battery, and I wasn't comfortable buying a new one without some kind of external battery. And it might have been you. Somebody said, you know, even though the form-fitting cradles don't work, there's this thing from Kensington, you know, that snaps on the bottom. And so they sent me one of those, and it does work. It's kind of like the way an FM transmitter fits on the bottom, except it's about, I don't know, 1¾ inches tall, and it works with an iPhone. It works with any iPod. It actually looks like it's more form fitted to go with the, you know, with like the video iPod, but works with my old iPhone. It's not what I want, you know. I want the cradle one, but it's at the moment I'm comfortable buying a 3G iPhone. This Kensington mini battery pack thing, which I think is $50, is the part that's going to let me feel comfortable buying it and not getting stranded at the train station. I'll spare you that story again. So that's my pick. For those of you who are like, you know, I want a 3G iPhone, but I'm worried about battery life. My cradle from Mophie or FastMac or whoever it is isn't going to fit right with the new one. Here's your transition product that, you know, that may be able to get you through however many months you got to wait for a form-fitting app. So there you go.
Great. And so that, how much is that?
I think it's $50. I should probably have looked that up before I made it my pick of the week, but just like I should have looked up the price for Jared before I picked that last week. But you know, It is, in, you know, I mean, there's always a trade-off for the fact that it's not form-fitting and it's just kind of a snap-on thing on the bottom. It is, I think, about half the price of the Cradle thing, so, you know, that may be more of a value play, too.
And that's at Kensington.com, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, Jeff, what is your iPhone pick?
I'm going with Bill this week and going for accessory as opposed to software. And so my pick is the ClearView skin for iPhone 3G. And it's from ClearView skin. And I've bought their skins before. Like I have one on a first gen iPod Nano. And they're just like insanely durable. And they hold up so well and they look really good on your device. So they don't detract. You know, it's just one of those clear covers. And it's like the whatever the material is that they put on helicopter blades so they don't get banged up from rocks. That's what this is. And it works really well. The advice I would give people, though, don't install it like I did, where you do it with your lights halfway down while you're watching the Olympic opening ceremonies, because then you end up with a cat hair under the surface. So now
I heard about that. Did you tweet about that?
Yes, I did tweet about that. So if I have something on the screen that's bright, like a white background, I can see a few of my cat's hairs under the skin now.
So,
which is annoying.
So what you're saying is you don't let your cat put it on there for you.
Right. Learn from my errors. Don't let the cat do it.
Okay. And how much is the ClearView skin?
They're like $15. And that includes a front for the glass and then a back piece that wraps up around the chrome bezel also.
Okay. And where can you get that?
ClearViewSkins.com.
Great. So Neil, do you have a pick for us?
I'll give you a picture. I'll tell you what my I'll tell you what my second favorite program is on the iPhone. Of course, Recall is my favorite one, but the second favorite I have is Shazam. And I don't know if you guys have reviewed this before, but and for those of you who don't know what Shazam is, it's a program which allows you to put your iPhone up to any music that you're listening to. And give it 30 seconds or a minute, and it'll come back and tell you what the title and what the artist is. So I thought it was very cool to be able to just put this up to your radio or whatever's playing music and hear the title like that. So I had a lot of fun and entertainment with this with some friends just to see that, hey, here's a program, here's a piece of software that can listen to music and tell you exactly what you're listening to.
Yeah.
If you can't remember the name of the artist, name of the song, etc. So a lot of fun. It's a free application, and it's good for some party entertainment. I hope they keep it free. Not sure if they're going to be able to, though.
Yeah, I love Shazam, and it works remarkably well, too. Say you're in a restaurant, and you hear something playing that you really like, and you can just run it, and 9 times out of 10, it'll figure out what the song is. So it's really great. And we've reviewed it on the site, and it's definitely very, very accurate. I thought it'd be really funny to try it out at Lollapalooza as the bands were playing live to see if it could figure out what the artist was playing the song, and it couldn't figure it out. I don't know if it was just because it was so loud or if it was because it wasn't exactly what they had in their database. But it works really, really well when you're listening to something on the radio or in iTunes or what have you, if it's the actual song. So Shazam is a free app, and that is in the App Store. And my pick is Sketches this week. And Sketches, as some of you may know, is a used to be an application for jailbroken phones. And it has a lot of improvements over the original version that was available for jailbroken iPhones. Right now, of course, it has the ability to take a picture from your camera roll, or you can take a picture right there. You can draw on it, or you can just draw on a blank piece of paper. But with this new version, you can actually it comes with a bunch of different shapes and stuff like that, and you can put a mustache on somebody, or you can get comment bubbles and stuff like that.
Can you put a mustache on Dave Hamilton?
I can put a mustache on Dave Hamilton.
Let's so, do that.
I'm picturing him with a big Snidely Whiplash mustache right now.
Oh man, yeah. So we can put a mustache on Dave. You know, if we see him and he doesn't have any facial hair, we can do that with sketches. But it also has some really really cool additions. You can bring up a web page if you want. You can bring up a web page like you can on your phone, and then you can annotate that web page however you want. Of course, you can put a hat and a mustache on the web page if you really need to, but you can also, you know, draw a circle around something and annotate it and send it off as an email, or you can send it, or you can save it rather to your photo library. And you can also go, you can, you know, say, give me a map and, you know, find where I am right now. And it'll actually give you a map of where you are and show you that. So you can annotate that and whatever. What's really cool, is that it also has a Flickr. Twitter integration. So earlier on my Twitter feed, I you know, just started playing around with sketches, and then I just said, okay, send this off to Twitter. And so it's kind of like what is the application? Sketch. It's kind of like Sketch on the iPhone. It felt like when I was using this, because it. You know, you can just bring up any picture or a website, or, you know, I guess if you wanted to take a picture of something on your phone, like a screenshot, annotate that, and then send that off to Twitter, you could do that as well. So it's got a lot of really cool features in there, and you can, you know, draw stuff and all of that. It's a very fun application. It's called Sketches, and I don't remember how much it is. I think it's maybe $5 or $10 in the App Store. Let me check. Sketches. Researching. Do you guys know? I'm trying to kill time as it searches.
Totally leaving you hanging here on this one.
Yeah, let's just start singing songs. Doot, doot, doot. Okay, it's $6 in the App Store. So check it out, Sketches. It's an awesome application. If you used it in the jailbroken form, it's much better now. You can actually save multiple sketches onto your, I guess, the cork board that it has. It's very, it has a lot of improvements, so check it out. And that is my pick. I should mention that we are going to New Media Expo, and that is August 14th through the 16th. I'm leaving on Thursday morning to go down there. Are you guys, I guess you're all going to be there. So I'm never good at explaining what New Media Expo is because I've never been there. So Bill, why don't you explain what New Media Expo is?
Sure. You're probably more familiar with it from its previous name of Podcast Expo. They've expanded it to include the other new media stuff like blogging and user stuff like Facebook and Twitter, and how it's sort of gone beyond podcasting and become a whole social media thing. The way I equate it is Macworld Expo is to Apple products as New Media Expo is to podcasting. If you're a podcaster or a blogger or you just love that stuff and you listen to them all day, this is where you go to meet people who do the shows, to learn how to start your own, to learn how to get the most out of them. And, you know, it's going to be fun because it's like 175 degrees in Vegas next week.
That's going to be awesome. But I think the convention center is inside the same building as the hotel, right?
It's actually next door, but they have a walkway.
Okay, good. So we don't ever have to go outside because us geeks aren't really used to going outside.
Yeah, my plan is to be outside long enough to get from the airport into the shuttle that gets me to the hotel.
Yes.
And then at the end of the week, I'll be outside again to go from the hotel into the shuttle to get back to the airport, and that's it.
You know, we're driving, so we're just going to drive literally into the hotel garage, get out, and go into the hotel. I don't expect to feel sunlight on my face the entire time.
That's a smart move.
I hope.
Yes, so if you're in the area, definitely come. Say hi. There are a lot of, you know, keynotes and presentations and, you know, things where you can learn more about new media and all of that at New Media Expo. How much is it to get into the expo hall?
Actually, it's free if you register in advance. The expo hall and the keynotes are free, and then if you want to do the conference sessions, that's a whole other pricing scale.
Okay. But, so yeah, if you're in the area, definitely come by and. Say hi to us. We're going to do a live iPhone, iPod panel. It's Friday morning, right?
Yeah, Friday at 11, and some big heavyweight names on there, and little old me too. So that'll be fun.
And I'll be on there as well. And I think Dave Hamilton. Who else?
Adam from MacCast is on there, Victor from Typical Mac User, and Ken from macOS Ken.
Cool. And we still haven't figured out if Callie is going to make it. I guess it's just, it depends on whether or not she gets a bus in time to get there. But Callie, if you're listening, you have to go. We are ordering you to go because we want to see you there.
I don't think you can order Callie. I think you just have to beg and plead.
Okay, we're begging you to go. We're not ordering you. bandwidth for the podcast is provided by Cashfly at cashfly.com. And don't forget to check out the website, iPhoneAlley.com. You can get iPhone news, tips, and reviews every day. And if you have a tip you want to share or a product you want us to review, let us know by clicking on the contact link on the left side of the page. And you can get show notes at iPhoneLA.com/podcast. And you can send your feedback, questions, or comments, or anything like that to podcast@iPhoneLA.com. And I did want to mention that this show was supposed to be live on TalkShoe, but TalkShoe just did not cooperate for us. It just wouldn't work. I think we tried starting the show three times. So to all of you who are hoping to hear it live, we're sorry. It was TalkShoe's fault. That's the way it goes. So once again, Jeff Gamet joins us from the Mac Observer at macobserver.com. And of course, you can stalk him on Twitter at twitter.com/jgamet. It's always great having you on, Jeff.
It's always fun. And if anyone is going to New Media Expo, feel free to come and say hi to me. I'll be the guy with a respectable haircut.
Yes, you did get a haircut, and it's very respectable.
It is. It is.
Yes. I haven't seen it yet, so you'll have to... Did you post pictures yet?
No, I haven't. I was thinking about just waiting till New Media Expo and doing a big reveal.
Did you get a mohawk?
I'm not saying. No, okay. I did not.
Okay.
I just got a plain old haircut, and it creates the illusion that I'm a respectable person, and that's all you can ask.
There you go.
What's a haircut?
Right.
I haven't had one since high school. I'm not sure what that means.
Yes. Bill Palmer joins us from iProng Magazine at iProngMagazine or iProng.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at twitter.com/BillPalmer. And it's always great having you on, Bill.
Hey, thanks for having me. You know, I know the Favre thing. You really don't know who Brett Favre is?
I know who he is. And I know who he at least used to play for. I assume that he was traded.
Yeah, I was going to make another Favre joke, and I thought, my God, maybe he doesn't even know who Favre is. Maybe there's no point.
I know who Brett Favre is.
He's played for the New York Jets now, and if that, you know, if that doesn't make your head explode, then...
That doesn't make any sense at all.
That's pretty much what everyone else is saying. But, anyway, if Favre ends up, they're saying the Jets may trade him again or something, so if he ends up trading you to the iPhone Alley team and you got to cut me, I can sign with the Dolphins like the old Jets. I'm, like, way off the reservation now. I'll stop talking, and thanks for having me.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for entertaining me. I really appreciate it. This is why I like being on this show, because Bill entertains me. Thank you.
I like how I just totally go off and say something idiotic and that should probably be edited out, and then Jeff just laughs and laughs, and I'm like, hey, man, I got one fan. One person thinks I'm funny.
Yes. I'm your number one fan. I'm probably also the only fan, but that's okay.
Yes,
I'm your number one fan.
There is no number two. So.
Hey, if he's your only fan, it's good that he's on the show. So you can hear him.
Yeah.
And of course, don't forget to check out Sunil's application, Recall, in the App Store. It is free, and it sounds fantastic. I know I'll be checking it out, and I'm sure we'll have a review up on iPhone Alley soon. So thank you so much for coming on the show. It was really great having you.
Thanks so much for having me, and I should emphasize it's Recall with a Q and not with a C.
Yes,
so,
I should spell it out. It's R-E-Q-A-L-L.
Yep. Well, thanks so much. I had a great time. This is a great show you guys have.
Thank you so much. And with that, another episode of the iPhone LA podcast is out the door.
An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. And an internet. And an internet. 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 We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.
Made on a Mac, motherfucker.